We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on NavaClub.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker tonight. And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Kurt, because he's our Nava Santa Claus, but that's just the way the calendar worked out this year. But we really do appreciate all that Kurt adds to Nava, and his home group is not at Nava Club, but I do want everyone to extend a warm welcome to Kurt.
My name is Kurt, and I'm an alcoholic. This is the fourth time I've told my story, and all of a sudden the nerves are coming on, and I've got to do something to try and calm down a little bit, because I was talking to somebody before the meeting, and they said, you know, you really don't look that nervous. And I said, you know, I'm not as nervous as I was before I did Santa Claus a week ago. I was really nervous about that, and then once I got in there and in the middle of it, everything, all the nerves went away, and I look forward to doing that every year. This year was my fourth year, and I know, my beard's really short, but, you know, they just don't seem to care, and I am the real Santa Claus, by the way. I'm just... Anyway, you're supposed to talk about what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now. I'm not from Atlanta originally. I'm from Portland, Oregon, in that area. I was born in 1956, month of June, and actually in Oregon City, Oregon. And it was a big, it was a hospital that was not like hospitals are today. It was very small, maybe four stories. And my parents lived in a small farming community, 8 miles kind of south west of Oregon City, which was 20 miles south of Portland. I don't know if anybody's ever been in that region, but, man, it's the mountains and all that are just, you know, I miss all that, you know, and I like Atlanta. I've met a lot of people here since I've been in Atlanta 7.5 years. But my sobriety date, I should mention that, is October 25th, 2008. And that wasn't my first white chip. Hopefully it was my last, because... My story started, of course, you know, when I finally had hit my first bottom was in 1983. And let me back up and tell you about my life growing up. My parents divorced when I was very young, probably between 1 and 2 years old. And they had moved to California, and my grandmother had taken the train and went down, and she goes, I will take him back till you get this straightened out. Taken back to Oregon, and so my grandmother brought me back as a baby, and my first recollection of anything was in living with my father, and I was going to a kindergarten. I remember that, and I remember not having, my mother wasn't there, and I didn't know why, and I didn't know for a lot of years, and a lot of my friends knew or talked about their parents. And they're like, where's your mom? And I kept saying, well, I think she died. You know, I didn't really know. And my dad wouldn't talk about it. And I don't know if I asked him or not. I really can't remember. But I remember feeling very different from that point on. And, went through school. And I went through, kind of jump ahead. And I kind of go back and forth on my story because... I'm just trying to tell it from memory, I heard a speaker say once, and I've listened to a lot of speakers over the years. He said, "What am I going to say?" He goes, "You just tell your story," is what his sponsor told him. So I'm just trying to tell my story and relate to you people. Hopefully, you can relate to me. And part of giving back what you get, what I've gotten. And my sobriety is being up here and sharing with you. And when I first got to the rooms of recovery, I didn't want to talk at all. You know, I was very, very shy. I grew up shy, but I wanted to be the class clown in school. And we'll go back to my school. You know, one of my first schools was a Catholic school. And my dad thought that would be very good for me and you know, give me some structure. And it was. I remember being in the hallway, and then when that didn't work, they put me in a room by myself. And I just wanted to be the class clown. I wanted to make everybody laugh, and that way I felt accepted. And I just wasn't interested in learning my studies or anything. And next thing I know is my dad being very disappointed in me because they kicked me out of Catholic school. So now I have to take you to public school. And public school, my first recollection was in fourth grade. And I fell in love with my teacher. You know, she didn't have the penguin outfit, as we used to call them, you know, with the habit. And, the, you know, the nuns were mean. And I have a lot of animosity toward that, you know. And I, you know, and it's, anyway, I went through that. And I know it affected me, but, you know, I can't be a victim anymore. There's things that happened over my life that I used to say, why did this happen to me? Why did you do that to me? Why, you know, I was always the victim, and I was always the victim of my parents. And I blamed them for a lot of years, and wasn't until they both passed on, which actually, by the way, they hadn't been together in 50 years, and they died 3 weeks apart, I didn't feel a victim anymore. And that was in 2006. Okay, see, I'm jumping back and forth, and I know... Try and keep up with me because I go all over the place. I'm kind of scattered, and people describe me as quirky. So, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad. Sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't like it. Went to grade school, and then by that time. We were living in Tacoma, Washington, and my dad met this woman who was soon to become my stepmother, and I later called her my wicked stepmother because I was in the way. I was in the way of my dad and her had three more kids, and my mom had three more kids after she had divorced my dad. So I actually have six brothers and sisters, two brothers and four sisters. Which I never had a lot of contact with until I got older. But anyway, my dad married, and we moved back to Portland. And I was 12 years older than my closest sibling. And I was always told I was in the way. And so I was doing things, acting out, and not, you know, and there was alcohol in the household at that time, and there was always alcohol at my grandparents' house. My grandmother liked to make home brew. She made homemade wine. She made it, anything that you could crush up and ferment, she made wine out of it and stored it away. I mean, it was like, and I will say this too, that my grandparents, you know, during the Prohibition, they helped moonshiners. You know, they were in the West. They were helping make moonshine. My grandfather was hauling it in secret compartments and stuff during his milk route. You know, he was one of the farmers that had milk cows, and he would haul, you know. So fast forward a whole bunch, and when I got caught growing marijuana on his farm, I like, what's the difference, Grandpa? You were doing moonshine. I mean, it was prohibited. Marijuana's prohibited. It's against the law. Oh, it's not the same. It's not the same. That's a damn drug, you know, and all this. So anyway... Drugs are in my story, and if you're offended, I know NAPA has a singleness of purpose. I truly believe in that. For a lot of years, I didn't understand what alcoholism is. Now I know it's one thing, and it centers up here in my mind. And I didn't learn that the way I know it now until I came to Atlanta, and I don't want to jump way ahead, but... I took my first drink, I think I was 15 years old, and that was at my grandmother's house. My dad had kicked me out of his house. We'd gotten in a big fist fight. He tried to take my car keys away from me. How dare he? You know, I bought that car with my own money, you know. And so my dad and I had our first knockdown, drag-out fight, and I won, you know. And I'm not so proud of that now, but boy, I was proud of it back then. And... So I moved in with my grandmother and changed high schools, and I spent the next 3 years at the little farming town. It was called Canby, Oregon, Canby Union High School. And all of a sudden, I discovered that my grandmother had this fifth of Seagram 7 down there that was just barely tapped. And so my friend and I, we drank that whole bottle. And I was experiencing a feeling that I had never felt before, and I've never felt it since then. And I chased it for years. And so that was my first taste of alcohol, and there's more here. So I started drinking in the morning before high school, drinking at high school. I always had a little bit of alcohol in me, you know, and it gave me that. I could talk to people. I could, you know, I could do certain classes I was excelling in. Most of them were electives. I couldn't do math. I was really good at, but the rest of it, social studies, science, all that, I could give a darn. And it was on from there, you know. It was on from there. The alcohol led to other things, and fast forward, I ended up in my first treatment center in 1983, and it was locked. It was locked, you know. The doors, like the double doors there, swung shut, and they had a magnetic lock, and we tried to push them open, and it didn't work, you know. And I'm like, wow, I'm stuck in here, you know. And I had admitted myself into that hospital at the urging of a emergency room doctor. He says, you know, you look like you have a problem. Most people don't have their ribs sticking out and stuff going on physically that you got going on. So I said, okay, I need a break. So 9 days I was locked up. Everything that I'd been putting in my body was detoxed out of my system. And I went to my first meeting of recovery. It wasn't an AA meeting, but it was a recovery meeting where they focused on the 12 steps. And it didn't make any sense to me at all back then. Not a lick of sense. And so the minute they let me out that day, I got drunk and loaded again. And it was on from then on. The rest of the 80s were a blur. And from 1986 to 1990, I had tried recovery again. I'd been in treatment centers. Luckily, I had really good insurance. And so I went to some of the best treatment centers. And I'm like, pretty soon I got to where I could just say what they wanted to hear. And they kept saying, though, when you leave here, you probably don't, you know, you're here because you want to stop all these other things. You probably don't want to drink alcohol because it could, as my sponsor says, wake up the beast. And that was, I had heard that back then, and I didn't believe them, you know. And I made it about 2 months, and I said, no, I can have a few drinks, and you know, it just waking the beast up again. And next thing I know, I'm in a treatment center, and I spent 7 weeks in the treatment center, and I didn't have insurance. I didn't, my family, that was the worst. That was what really made a turning point in 1990, of where I decided I really needed to try and stay sober and clean, as I called it back then. And I said, you know, I'm going to die, and I don't want to die, because this is where it's going to lead to. I was probably looking at things I'd been doing where I could have done prison time. I'd done county jail, and that was, you know, overnight, and that was terrible. And I couldn't imagine being locked up for longer than that. And so, by the grace of God, I guess I never happened. But, you know, trust me, I committed my share of felonies. I just never got caught or convicted. And I started going to a lot of meetings. About a year and a half sober, I met up with some friends of mine that I'd known from high school, and they were in recovery. And one guy in particular was riding a motorcycle, and I had always liked motorcycles, and I didn't have one at the time. And he says, well, you can't hang out with us. It was a clean and sober motorcycle club, and you can't hang out with us unless you have a Harley Davidson. So, all right, I got to get a Harley Davidson. I got that, and I prospected for that club, and we were going around to meetings, and we'd go to a meeting until the people in the neighborhood said, the bikes are too loud, and they'd kick the meeting out of the church. And it's like, that's not right. We want to go to these meetings. We want to pass the message on to the biker who still suffers. That's what we did. And I got to meet quite a few young ladies because of the motorcycle. And there's nothing like the look on a guy as you're driving down 82nd Avenue in Portland, and this girl's behind you on their motorcycle, and she's wearing a miniskirt. And they're almost running into each other. Anyway, that's not very similar. So I was a member of that club up until 2005, and I stopped going to meetings. I decided I didn't need the club anymore. They weren't listening to me, even though I was an officer of the club. And I stopped going to meetings, and that's the key right there. I've heard this so many times. What happened? I used to think relapse was an event. I've since learned relapse is not an event. It's a process. It's my thinking. And I still obsessed about drinking and using, even though I was going to meetings and I was, you know, sharing in meetings, celebrating my birthday. It was only a matter of time before I started lying, cheating, and stealing worse again. By that time, I was in a relationship, a live-in relationship. She was in recovery. And I decided one day that I can drink, and I'll do it behind her back, and I can smoke some weed, and I'll do it behind her back. Well, she caught me. You know, it was inevitable. She goes, well, you know, this is not going to work. I said, no, it'll be okay. I'll just smoke weed only. And that didn't work. You know, we split up. We the bikes were gone. The house was gone. I'm living in a house by myself. And things just went downhill major from then. Then 6 years from 08 until 98 until 04, I hit another bottom. You know, I lost everything, and I found myself on a phone here to DeKalb Addiction Clinic over on Wynn Way, and I'm making an appointment with them, and they say, well, can you get here to go to treatment? And I said, well, I can either find a ticket and fly there, stay with my sister. My sister at that time lived in Lawrenceville. Anyway, through circumstances that I don't even know how I made it, I flew here, got a job, went back, sold most of everything, and drove across the United States in a van with a trailer on it. Some people, if you remember me from being here in 04, you remember that van I used to drive here and give guys rides to meetings, but I'm jumping ahead again. But NABA is really important. I want to get to sobriety because they say you should spend like 15 minutes talking about the drunkologues and spend the rest of your time talking about recovery. And I'd like to do that because coming to NABA, I didn't want to come here the first time. I ended up renting a room from a woman who had 9 years sobriety, and I had picked up again, and she wasn't going to have that. And she brought me here, dropped me off right outside those doors, and she goes, those two guys standing in front, go talk to them, and they will help you. And anyway, some of the stuff they were saying made sense. They said, we've been waiting for you. And I'm like, what did she do? Call ahead? You know, I couldn't figure that out. And so, but I saw people. Something about this clubhouse, I felt a connection coming here. So I came here, stayed here all day, went to meetings at night with these guys, and I don't know. There was another guy, and I don't see him here tonight. I don't know if he heard that I was telling my story, but he. At that time, he was watching me kind of from a distance, and he told me, whenever you want to work the program, let me know. And he was my sponsor for a while, and he sponsored me for quite a while. And And so I, at that time, I was a member of a home group that did meetings here at, in Abba, and it's the 545. I don't know if anybody knows about that group or not, but it's, yeah, very good group. I went to the 545 almost every day. Things started looking good, and I started getting healthier. I started putting on weight. My beard started getting longer. some of you might remember that, but I was coming to the 545. I was a member of the home group. I was the intergroup rep. But there was still something missing, and I was still obsessing about the drink, and changing the way I felt, because I'll jump ahead again. Last weekend, I kind of went through that same kind of feeling, and I did isolate a little bit, and I don't recommend it, but I was talking on the phone with a few people, one person in particular, and I got through that. But what I can say has happened for me to put this 3 years together again is that I started praying, and I don't do this every day. Sometimes I forget until in the middle of the day. Sometimes I remember driving to work. But I try and check in with the God of my understanding, my higher power, as they call it, and call him, her, whoever. I don't know when the change happened. I have no idea. I just know that the obsession is gone. Or was gone. It has been gone for quite some time. And I don't think about drinking and using. Now, there come a time where, in the past year and a half, where I focused my obsession on something else, a person, place, or a thing. It happened to be a person. And it got to the point where I didn't want to drink. And I didn't want to change the way I felt, but I didn't want to feel that way anymore. And I actually thought, maybe I'd be better off dead. And I shared that with somebody out there in the foyer, and he says, something's working, because you're not thinking about pouring alcohol and your problems anymore. So something's working. And that, at that time, that didn't make sense when he said that to me. But today it makes sense. And realistically, I don't want to end my life. I mean, I like living life. You can't feel and experience things if you're gone, you know. And when it's my time, you know, it's my time. But God knows that I should have died a lot of times in my lifetime. And when I've asked people that have a lot of time in this program, why do you think that is, that I've lived through all this stuff? And they said it's because your higher power wants you to share that with people that are struggling. And that stuff, you know, it makes sense to me today. I remember when I first started coming around Navin, and I had like 30 days, and my sponsor at the time, who my sponsor was, my first NABA sponsor in Atlanta, was appointed to me. Because your sponsor's in the bathroom. And I'm like, he is. And the guy came walking out. There's your sponsor, you know. So anyway, that worked then. But then I lost my train of thought, and I didn't want to do that. Wow. I'm totally drawing a blank. Anyway, I was talking about that sponsor, and darn it, I was doing so good. Anyway, I just came back to me. I said, I only have 30 days. They said, go talk to that guy that raised his hand and said it was his very first meeting. Go talk to him. And I said, what have I got to share with him? I've only got 30 days. And the response was, you can tell him how you got 30 days. And so that, you know, after a while, that made sense to me. And I don't remember what year it was, but I kept coming to NABA every day and going to the 545. And one day there was this kid sitting out there on the bricks. His face was all red. He had long hair, and his aunt was in here and said, would you please go talk to my nephew? And so I went out and sat next to him, and I told him, I said, looks like you're having a rough go of it. And he said, yeah. He goes, I can't drink anymore, and I need to learn how to stop. And I said, well, me and my sponsor can show you how. You just have to commit to coming here every day and calling me every day. And I wasn't his first sponsor, but a week later he asked me to sponsor him, and I said, did you have a sponsor for this week? And he said, yeah. And I said, you know, you need to tell him that you're not going to work with him anymore. He needs to know. You can't just cut him off and not ever talk to him again. And he goes, well, I don't know if I'm ever going to run into him. And I said, well, you might run into him here. He goes, oh, he never comes to NAVA. I swear to God, my hand to God. 2 minutes later, the guy came driving in here. And I go, there he is. Go tell him. And he's like, oh, man. But he did it. He went and told him. And that kid and I sponsored him for, I don't know, a couple years. And am I keeping you awake, Tim? Sorry. I'm trying to be entertaining, you know. I could start telling jokes, but no. Nah. Anyway, that's the one thing I want to be entertained when I hear somebody tell their story, and that's why I love going to conventions. I went to NAVA Prepaid. I signed up for it, got my hotel and everything, and I went up there by myself, and you know, my brain got to me again. I ended up staying in my hotel room and watching sports and things. You know, it was kind of nice to get away from Atlanta. But I did go to the convention, and I tried to connect with people, and it just didn't go like I wanted, and things just don't go like it. But you know what? The main important thing is I stayed sober. I didn't drink. And I don't know. I can't say today that I'm never going to take a drink again or want to take a drink. You know, even as soon as last weekend, my brain went to the place of, on Saturday, I could go buy some whiskey and nobody would ever know it. It's Christmas Eve. I'm by myself. Who's going to know? Well, I'm going to know. And plus, it would disappoint a lot of people. I remember that the last time that I picked up again, and I only stayed out for about 2 weeks, and it damn near killed me, you know. But I remember people, the look on their face when I walked back into the rooms and said, you know, I picked up again. And, I mean, I went, it doesn't get any better. It's not any better. My disease progresses while I'm not drinking and using. No matter how much that I'm in contact with my higher power, no matter how much I'm in contact with my friends, it's still, and I love this one, it's outside in the parking lot doing push-ups. I always could relate to that, you know. It's a disease of my mind. And so I used to think that I could outwit it. And, you know, my best thinking got me to where I had totally given up, and I didn't want to give up. I just wanted to surrender. And surrendering is coming over to the winning side, you know, to me. So, dang, I got 20 more minutes. Tell me how much left. I'm trying to think of what else I could... Oh, okay. I know what else I can talk about. Last year when I was talking about to where I didn't want to get drunk and I didn't want to use, I didn't like the way I was feeling after, and I found out that I could obsess on a person. And so I found out there was another... I'm going to put a little plug in for what goes on inside of that little room sometimes. I started going to meetings in there. And I call myself a double winner now. And that is Al-Anon. I go to Al-Anon, and as much as I go to AA, because I found out that I need that too. You know, I read their literature, and I try and stick with the singleness purpose of whichever meeting I'm in. And I realize this is an AA speaker meeting, but like I talked with the guy who, what was your name? Where did he go? Tim. When I talked with Tim, he said, you know, you got to tell your story, and my story has Al-Anon in it. And some people don't really get what Al-Anon is about. And I found out that after I didn't drink or use other substances for a long time, that I still had something going on up here that the AA just wasn't going to fulfill, and it didn't fulfill. And so I'm glad that, you know, my old AA sponsor has like just celebrated 30 years, and he's been Al-Anon 5 years, and he was the one that told me to go to this one meeting that he went to. And so I've been going there. I'm almost in May, it'll be 2 years that I've been going to that. So it is what it is. Service work is very important to me, and I'm, you know, the home group, I don't know if he mentioned the home group. My home group is in Decatur, and it's an 11:30 meeting on the corner of Church and Claremont. And there is a lot of cool people in that meeting. Now, I used to go to meetings in Atlanta here all over the place, and so there's a lot of people that recognize my face, recognize my name. And I think that's very important, to be known and have people know your name. And it helps me be accountable to all of you, you know. If you're like me, when you first came into an AA meeting, you just could not see how AA was going to help. And today I know, I don't know how it helped, I just know that it did. And the important thing is to be involved, to do like me, tell your story, speak in meetings, don't speak every time. You know, one of my sponsors told me once, you got two ears and one mouth, you should listen twice as much as you speak. And one very important thing, too, is, and I'll touch on sponsorship. I've talked about sponsors. And it's very important that if you ask somebody to sponsor you, that they have a sponsor. See, I didn't know that for long. The first couple guys that I asked back in Oregon that I asked to sponsor me, one guy didn't even have a sponsor. He would just go into meetings every day. And eventually I got that, you know, got that part of it. I feel like I'm starting to ramble now. I'm trying to think what else I could tell in this story. The last 3 years of my life, I've had you know, a few struggles, but I just keep coming back. And I don't know, I'm drawing a blank again, and I wanted to fill the whole hour up, but I guess I'm not going to be able to. So if you're new, don't be shy like me. I was very shy, and believe me, in 1990, they knew how shy I was in that treatment center, because in the little community of the treatment center, they appointed me mayor. And that was the last thing I wanted to do, was to be able to sit up in front of the community of people in treatment and run this little meeting. And those counselors knew what they were doing. I thought they were all full of crap. And I didn't really trust those counselors until some of them shared with me that they were in recovery too. Now, I would trust them more than the ones that aren't in recovery, let's put it that way, because until you've lived it, I don't think you can give good experience and I don't want to say advice, And I don't like to give advice myself. I like to say what I did and what works for me. But I'll be forever grateful for that when they did that with me, because, you know, the only thing I could do in front of a group of people until I poured alcohol into my body was cut up and be stupid and, you know, try and make people laugh at me. And it was just silliness looking back. And, you know, when Tim asked me to come up here and tell my story, I felt this sense of belonging again. Because the NAVA Blue Chip, you know, first of all, they're recording it, and it'll probably be on the internet or something like that. I don't know. But that's fine with me, because I'm not ashamed of being an alcoholic. Now, today, in my work environment, because of past experiences, I have chosen not to break my anonymity at work. They know that I don't drink. They don't know why, but I just said plain and simple that if I drink, it'll kill me, and I don't want to die. And so they've left it at that. They don't hound me about it, you know. And they were Friday, day before Christmas Eve, you know, people were drinking, and that's their thing. That's what they did, and they don't really, you know. In the past, it's just not been good to say, oh, I'm an alcoholic and I go to AA and in the work environment. And believe me, it's hard not to say it sometimes. Sometimes I want to say, this is why I don't drink, because I'm in AA, you know, like I used to do. And it's just better to not do that anymore. Things are happening in my life. You know, they talk about the promises. I have an Al-Anon sponsor and I have an AA sponsor, and I've been through. I've never went all the way through the 12 steps. I think step 12 is something that once you get established with your sponsor and with your home group and all that. Step 12 is just, I believe I've had the spiritual awakening, you know, and I carry my message to alcoholics, and I try and be an example to other people that are struggling. And it has been told to me before that, you know, when I have been back out there using and feeding my disease, that there's a lot of people in here that aren't getting my message, because I'm not in here to tell you and help you and teach, for lack of a better word, how to stay sober. I don't know if there's teaching it. You know, I believe in setting my example. And if you're having problems, you know, my problems, sometimes they just seem insurmountable, but they're really not as bad. And if I was drinking and using, I wouldn't be able to deal with them like I do. And there, I have experienced what they call the nine step promises, knowing a new freedom and a new happiness. And I wasn't feeling that happiness over the weekend. And then today, when I knew I was telling my story tonight, I started feeling a little better. And I got a text from somebody today, and they said, are you freaking out about telling your story? And I'm just like, no. And one thing is, it's because I've done it before. Now, the first time I did it, yeah, I was freaking out for weeks ahead of it. But now, you know, I'm just telling my story, and that's all I know. Is to tell my story. And I know I've left a lot of stuff out, but because, like I was telling my sponsor over the weekend, I said, you know, I could probably fill the whole hour up pretty easy if I just went chronologically from start to finish. But I don't know. I think the main thing is that no matter if you have a slip, the important thing is to come back in and try again. It's like falling off the horse. Get back on it. Don't give up. I had a friend that used to, her and I were members of the 545, and she took her life last year. And I had told her, I said, you know, I want you to come back to meetings. And I said, I don't care if I have to carry you through those doors. I will take you back to the meeting. You know, you are welcome. I have a friend that's out there now, and he's drinking. He used to be a member of the 545. He hasn't been here in 3 years. I talk to him every once in a while, and I said, you are welcome back. Sometimes I think the alcoholism keeps us. It's the ashamed, being ashamed of what of that you did drink again. And it's, I don't think there's shame in that. The shame is that if you don't come back and ask for help, if you need help and you don't ask for it. I learned from coming to these rooms in NAVA, and I don't want to just keep plugging NAVA, but NAVA is a wonderful clubhouse and a wonderful venue for AA meetings, but I had to learn to ask for help. Sometimes I wanted a dollar to buy a something from the local choke and puke, because I used to call them McDonald's. Anyway, I had to ask for money, you know, and that was hard. I had to ask for help, you know, staying sober. And I didn't used to want to call up somebody and say, hey, I'm feeling like drinking. Because I thought, darn it, if I'm going to drink, I'm just going to go do it. Why would I want to call them and have them talk me out of it? But I found out that if you just make that phone call before the phone call is over, you're not thinking about doing that anymore. And the more you do it, the better it gets. The more you do it, it's like anything, you know. And this journey of recovery, I want to thank everybody. I don't know a lot of you. There are some voices, some faces that I recognize, and some people, I didn't want to hear them say that they came here just because they heard I was telling my story, but, you know, that made me feel good. Whether they were lying, doesn't matter. I'm glad that you're all here, and I hope you got something out of it, and if you got any questions, or if you need anything, you can always come up and ask me, and if I don't have the answer, I will find out the answer. I don't want to ask other people questions, and there's no stupid question about recovery. You know, there's none at all. And thanks for letting me be up here, and I haven't, other than talking about it, I haven't thought about taking a drink in this last since I started talking. And it's about 10 minutes till 9, and they probably got some little things we got to do here. So, you know what? I'm going to stop right there, and thank you for letting me tell my story.
Thank you, Kurt.
charge.